Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
Welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast dedicated to books written by Asian and Asian Americans. My name is Marvin Yue.
I'm Rira Yu.
And we're your hosts. And this episode, we're going to be talking about the book club pick for the month of May, which is also Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, The Sympathizer by Viet Thanh Nguyen. And to help us discuss this book, we brought in a special guest and friend, Chris Din.
Hello. Thanks. Hey. Thanks for having me.
Welcome. Chris is a screenwriter, an actor, and my partner in crime for the other podcast that we do called Fresh Creatives. Thanks for joining us. For some reason, we just thought of you when we chose this book. Like, we have to get Chris on this pod to talk about this book.
I really appreciate you guys thinking of me. I read this book a while back, mm-hmm. and love it. I just love it so much, and I became a huge fanboy of Viet, the author, and I've like read almost every interview and watched every clip I could of him.
Really relieved when you said that you already read this book, because the trouble about getting guests on this podcast is it's a commitment. You have to finish the book before you come to the recording.
I'm surprised you haven't read the book yet, because it's like a Pulitzer Prize winning, like,
it was on my to-be-read pile, and it just stayed there for a long time because there were like other books, and I'm like, oh, this book is very long. I'll wait until I finish a little bit.
I think it was definitely one of the more denser books that we've read for this book club in our young less than a year life. But it's definitely, I felt like it was like four different stories in one. Right. There's just so many twists and turns and thematic changes. And, but okay, before we get to that, let's intro the book.
Yeah.
All right. The Sympathizer is a sweeping epic of love and betrayal. The narrator, a communist double agent, is a man of two minds, a half French, half Vietnamese army captain who arranges to come to America after the fall of Saigon. And while building a new life with other Vietnamese refugees in Los Angeles, is secretly reporting back to his communist superiors in Vietnam. The Sympathizer is a blistering exploration of identity and America, a gripping espionage novel, and a powerful story of love and friendship.
Good blurb.
So I guess before we start getting into the plot and the narrative arc of this book, how much did you guys know about the Vietnam War before reading this book?
I'll start as a Chinese-Taiwanese person.
I mean, that's right, because all of us are different Asian Americans at this table. Mm.
Recently, I've actually seen multiple works of this new kind of refugee fiction that's been growing the last few years. I watched Queen Nguyen's Viet Gone, which is a play that went off Broadway in New York and is coming down to San Diego and San Francisco, I think, soon. And also, we just read an advanced copy of, well, it's out now.
It's out now.
The Best We Can Do by T-Bui, who we also interviewed on this podcast. So, you know, there's that kind of like this new generation of fiction coming from the refugee experience. But also growing up in San Gabriel, most of my friends in high school were Vietnamese, you know, either Vietnamese Chinese, ethnic Chinese, or Vietnamese, whose parents were refugees. I think people our age typically were born here, at least my peers, but their older siblings were part of, like, were also refugees as well. And so I've always been aware of this story, and, you know, I've had that in the back of my mind, but, you know, not personal experience.
Mm. I am Vietnamese American, Vietnamese Chinese. Both of my parents are half Chinese, half Vietnamese. So I got a lot of these stories growing up. My dad's also very, I think there are two different, when it comes to talking about the past, I think two different types of Asian parents, and those who like share freely. And then I feel like I have a lot of friends who have parents who would rather not kind of mm-hmm. share those stories. They don't want to relive it. My dad happened to be like a sharer, an oversharer. He's been telling us stories since my brother and I, since we were, you know, tiny kids. And so I was very familiar. And also my dad is like, has always encouraged me to, you know, don't accept what they say, what you hear about it in school, you know, read on your own. It's not as black and white as they portray it. And so it was, I mean, I actually read this book before it won the Pulitzer on mm-hmm. my way to Vietnam. To visit family. Yeah. So it took on a whole new, like, it just, the experience of when I was reading it and it was just so impactful to me. And so I was like very aware. My parents are both, refugees, and they came after the war. And so I'm like very, very familiar, I guess.
I guess out of the three of us, I am probably the least familiar with the history of the Vietnam War. My U.S. history professor, not professor, I guess U.S. history teacher back in high school was a Vietnam vet. So I got a lot of the American perspective. Mm. And I also got the Korean perspective because South Koreans also fought in the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And I think the Vietnamese refugee experience was like, I've kind of, gotten familiar with it as I got older because I've been reading more literary fiction, going to see more plays. But honestly, I didn't know much about how like Vietnamese American refugees built a community here in Southern California. I like don't really know much about how they've carved out their identity here, because I think most Vietnamese literature has been so focused on the war, or like told from the communist side, or literature about the Vietnam War. And also like with the refugee stories, it's always the aftermath of the war. So I always thought that this book was really interesting because it goes from the war to the refugee experience and then like kind of like goes back to Vietnam. So like it's a really weird narrative arc.
Well, there's this trope that is, we were talking about this at our book club meeting earlier, how, you know, there's these new stories, especially from the refugee perspective, is adding new tropes to the Asian American, like, canon, right? So in the past, Asian American stories have mostly been about, like, generational differences, you know, the immigrant experience from, like, I want to say East Asian perspective, where we're coming here for work or education, and it's more like a gap between like overachieving parents and like kids who grew up here with American values. I'm like, these new experiences are adding to that. Like now you have like the experience of like people who lost their country, people who never stopped fighting the war. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to see these stories start to come out because it's really is, we've had, like Chris said, like more and more people are now entering that sharing phase where they want to talk about their experiences.
Yeah, like at book club, we were talking about how there's this pattern in historical fiction and also just in, I guess, like war stories. Like during the war, any work that comes out that's about it, it's very spontaneous. It's very patriotic.
Yeah, it's about the heroism of like,
yeah, so it's like,
good guy.
So it's like patriotism, and then you get to like the horrors of war, the atrocities of war, and then you get to the refugee experience. And, there's always like this buffer time of 40 years for the refugee stories to come out, cause it's just like, it's usually the second generation that covers it.
Yeah.
And the author is also, I mean, not necessarily second generation, but he was very young when he fled Vietnam. Because
it took till like the 90s for like, was Schindler's List like the first like Holocaust movie, a movie about the Holocaust?
I don't know if it was the first one, but it.
I mean, before then, it was just like Anne Frank. Like, that was what everyone read, was like the Anne Frank diary.
That's what it feels like. But I have a feeling there must have been.
I'm sure there were
others coming, especially out of Europe.
But it doesn't come into prominence until decades later.
I mean, by prominence, we mean Hollywood doesn't take notice or like green light a big
white
movie.
People don't take notice until.
Which interestingly is a big theme and a big part of this book. But yeah, I guess interesting to see like. You mentioned that most of like the discussion on this about this book from other outlets or other book clubs have been a lot about how this is a side of the war that people didn't realize had stories. Didn't realize had these stories come out of it.
Yeah, a lot of Americans a lot of like white Americans, when they hear about the Vietnam War, they think of like PTSD and like the vets who come back from the war traumatized, but they don't really, remember the people who fled that country and had to like carve out their own identity here.
Yeah.
And that there's a generational trauma. It's not because like at least with American vets, they come back home and their family is generally not affected by it. But I feel like with refugees who fled to America, there is a generational trauma. And we've noticed it in T. Bui's graphic memoir. And I think we see it a lot in this book as well.
It could be one side. It's just the whole thing about this book and the two identities, the split identities, the two sides. It's just so powerful to me because, you know, you can describe, I haven't read T. Bui's book yet, but, you know, you could describe it as trauma. I was reading somewhere that, you know, the two types of people that come out from after a war are the survivors. They have two mentalities. It's either, you know, oh my gosh, we gotta keep our heads low and just survive after this, or the ones who come out of it feeling like, dude, we made it out of that war alive. We made it. We're alive. Like, let's live life to the fullest. I think those are the two. And depending on where you sit on that spectrum, that's the stuff that you pass down to the next generation, you know? It's kind of related to that, you know, is it generational trauma or, you know, you could, definitely, there is a lot of trauma, of course. And then there, you know, I think there's other sides to it as well.
And I guess it also comes to like, where were you pre-refugee, right? Mm-hmm. Were you always, cause there's some people who have always been survival mode. Like, talk to my grandparents, right? They're, when they were growing up in China was at war with the warlords, with the Japanese, and not with the Japanese, and with each other for centuries before then. So like they grew up in, you know, a war zone. And so when they, you know, immigrated to Taiwan, they were still kind of in survival mode for the most part.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. We're all from different, from different backgrounds. You know, we've got Taiwan, Korea, Vietnam, but it seems like there was something, it's whether, you know, the Chinese flee to Taiwan or Korea got split in half or Vietnam completely got taken over. There's like we all dealt with it. Our, you know,
and we all had to deal with kind of being
the
fallout from it, and like being the proxies of this, like, and that was a big thing too with this book, like the Occident and the Orient, the communist and the capitalist, like the, you know, the two sides of ideologies that originally from the Western world, really, and you know that we were forced
upon them.
Like,
yeah,
there was this really great quote in there, like, they called it the Cold War, but the war was never cold for Vietnam.
Right.
It was like,
that was a good
a
quote.
War.
Yeah.
I guess we can get into, I guess, like the protagonist, the nameless protagonist, because we never get his name in this book.
We get a lot of names. Like, the, what was it? The, you get, you never get the major's name, the one that gets assassinated. You never get the lieutenants or the captain. Like, they're just described, effectless, crapulent.
Yeah, like the protagonist, he introduces himself as a man of two faces because he is half French, half Vietnamese, and a man of two minds because he is a double agent. So I just wanted to get a feel of how you guys felt about the character.
Yeah, so the character is a agent for the Communist Party or the Communist regime, embedded into the secret police of
the South.
The South, which is the, I guess, the nationalist or the capitalist regime. Like the South Vietnamese Army.
The South Vietnamese, the American side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
because you could make an argument that both sides were nationalists.
That's true.
Yeah.
They both wanted. I thought it was interesting that the fact that the author made him biracial, because it opens up the, I guess, the narrative opportunity to have both sides be totally racist against him, which is interesting to see. Like, part of the theme was like, yeah, like both sides, East and West, U.S. and Vietnam, North and South Vietnam, everyone was kind of shitty to each other. Mm-hmm. Like,
And I thought it was really effective to bring in a whole new, maybe it makes him easier to relate to outside of being Vietnamese, because, you know, I think a lot of immigrant kids and immigrants themselves feel two-faced.
They don't belong anywhere,
right. There's always a double identity to them, but to make him actually have a French father, right? Mm-hmm. It was a French father and a Vietnamese mother. I think accents that even more.
And a French, like, priest father, too.
I thought it was interesting because I almost felt like the protagonist was, like, an embodiment of Vietnamese history. Like, by making him biracial, it's also making a commentary on like, French colonialism in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. That's something that, before reading The Best We Could Do, I totally forgot that there was a whole, like, war against the French for independence right before the Vietnam War, like the war against the communists and the, like, that war. The Indochina War was something that happened.
It's interesting because, you know, depending on which side you're looking at it from, definitely from the other side, it has always been a war for independence.
Yeah.
It's a one continuous war for independence, just against many different foes. But yeah, the French having the biggest impact on them for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, this book, the format of it is quite interesting because it's written as if it's a confession.
Yeah.
And
that took a while for me to get the rhythm down. Like,
yeah, because there's, like, the format's a little weird because there's no quotations. Yeah. Like, it's all, like, in one giant paragraph almost. But I thought it was interesting because it gave the author a chance to explain American culture to Vietnamese people. Like, usually when usually Asian American literature, sometimes it leans more towards like explaining the Asian culture to Americans. It's kind of like writing to the more dominant audience.
Yeah.
Whereas like with this book, it's just like, Americans are weird.
Yeah.
Like,
this may seem weird to you. Mm-hmm.
It's like, a lot of white hippie girls in college, they like do yoga and like, it's like explaining all these.
Let me explain you free love.
Yeah.
It took me a while to catch on as well, but, the payoff for that was pretty great.
But yeah, even like, so in the last few chapters, it actually became kind of meta, right? Because the confession, like the first 307 pages becomes an actual object within the story. And I mean, those last few chapters were really pretty rough. Like, they're talking about, like,
well, we'll talk about like the reveal. Last part at the end of this episode, because I feel like there's a lot to be said before then.
It's true. Let's not jump ahead.
Yeah so, but like, I'll go ahead.
I'll save it for later, but you know, the guide to living safely in a science fictional universe.
Oh, yeah, that was one of our picks. Yeah.
It's like, in a way, similar, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But anyways, we'll talk about it later.
Actually, when I turned the page and I found that it was meta, I was like, no!
Oh, really?
Rio's not a fan.
I'm not a fan of meta. I'm not, but I appreciate the fact that it was
You're
done
also not
well.
A fan of Stream of Consciousness, right?
I'm not. So, like, I am not. Maybe that's why
I don't mind it. Yeah. I thought it was, yeah. Anyways.
I like the use of the confession here because it's like such a, dude, it's like, I heard about it all the time growing up, the re-education camps, you know, like, just thinking about what happens to the people who were left behind, you know?
Yeah.
There was a whole other saga that the Vietnamese people had to go through after the American chapter closed. And it was rough, dude. Like, you know, like what they had to go through. Imagine, like, you know, we're here, everything seems fine. And then suddenly, I don't know, ISIS invades California and takes over and replaces the government. And what happens to all of us? Like, it's a whole new thing.
I mean, if we want to draw parallels, imagine like the, have you watched The Handmaid's Tale? Like, imagine like this, like, white nationalist movement takes over America. Like, what happens to us?
Right. Yeah. You know, and we think we're winning, right? We think that, oh, you know, like we're, there's no way that they would take over. Next thing you know, they control everything. And what happens to everyone?
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting. That reminds me of that one quote within the book about how, like, you know, we don't need the French or the Americans. Like, we can fuck ourselves just as well as they can.
I have a thing of highlights, and that was one of the things that's highlighted for me.
And that was just like so, like, just heartbreaking, but like so true. Like, you know, we don't like need other people to like exploit us.
We'll exploit ourselves.
Yeah, like, if we have the power, people with power exploit. Anyways, what's next?
I mean, did you guys want to talk about how, like, our protagonist fled from Saigon and into America? Because that was, like, a whole arc in this book.
Right. So, I mean, the first arc, the book is broken up into, like, a bunch of different arcs, right? So, the first arc is about the fall of Saigon, about the escape, which is, like, in itself, like, a harrowing story that could be its own, like, movie or something, just, like, how the civilian, or not even the civilian in this case, but how people, what happens when you lose a war and like the enemy is encroaching, they're already like shelling the airport. And like, I thought it was really, really, it was tense. I felt
it was so tense. Like the way it opens on that day where it's like it's done. Like the Northern Front is broken. And
yeah, they broke through. Like, it's about like him bribing people to like,
dude,
you know,
so tense. Like, we have no idea what our, you know, we all have family members who've gone through some version of that. And I just,
and this was like, this was these were like the important people. These are people that the CIA was evacuating. It's not mentioning like the boat people and people who like escaped through like other means, you know. Like, these were like the fortunate ones who got planes.
I thought it was interesting that like we get to see like the general and like the lieutenant, like what they were before they came to America, and then how like they ended up being like gas station attendants and like minimal wage workers. And it's just like, oh, like some people have embraced it, and other people, like the general, they're kind of stuck in their past.
Well, a lot of the primary characters from the South Vietnamese side were soldiers and officers, right? Mm-hmm. And those are the people who, for them, the war wasn't over, right? It was just a delay. And this is something that happened in Taiwan too. Mm-hmm. You know, in Taiwan, after the communists pretty much exiled the nationalist government to Taiwan, like Taiwan was under martial law until like the late 80s, because it was always like we were going to go back and like take back our country.
Yeah.
And eventually, like, you had to give that up, right? But for the longest time, like, brutal. It was under martial law, under effectively authoritarian government, because it was still technically at war, right? And I thought that was, like, for the general, like, and for even a lot of the refugees, right? Like, and I guess we can get into this too, like the fact that they lost their country and had to come to America and be these menial workers when they were intelligence officers, captains, like they used to command platoons and squads, like it emasculated them, right? And that was a huge part of the story where, like, you know, they didn't feel like they deserve to work these menial jobs. So their wives went on to work and became more.
Yeah, like the women really stepped up. Like,
yeah, yeah.
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 And that whole thing, again, kind of playing into that theme of like split identities, yeah. two mm-hmm. sides, you know, a war hero and then now a gas station clerk.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like. It repeats. I mean, it's obviously found in every immigrant kind of refugee story.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that our protagonist, he had an American college education and then he joined the Communist Party, like as a spy.
Uh-huh.
And
well, he was already a spy.
Yeah. I mean, he was already yeah. a spy, mm-hmm. but he comes back to America and even though he is familiar with the culture mm-hmm. and like speaks the language like fluently, mm-hmm. he still has this readjustment period.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, here's the thing though, like back in like where he must have been like the '60s, right? When he went to college,
50s, yeah.
50s, 60s, like the emerging of
the hippies.
Hippie stage. Colleges are actually where
pretty people, liberal.
They're super liberal. And back then liberal meant socialist, mm-hmm. which meant communist. Like people thought all professors are commies. Mm. Like even in this book, you can kind of see like the people who, like, the professors that he knew were all kind of more socialist-leaning people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it actually wasn't a surprise that he kind of maintained his communist ideals because he was in college.
Though. Yeah. Wasn't that white professor in the book such...
The one he worked for?
Yeah. Oh, my like, God. He's like, look at my Asian wife.
The head of the Oriental Studies program at Occidental College, which totally. Is up right up here.
Right up here.
The street in
yeah,
the
right
garage.
Up the street. Yeah. yeah. I thought that scene was just so funny. Like, anytime...
We've all met a dude
Yeah, like we like, all met out, a dude like that.
Like, check out my Asian wife.
Totally.
You know, check out, like, you should be more... You should, like... Didn't he, like...
Like, so, his secretary, Miss Mori, yeah, who is Japanese-American, he was like, oh, how come, like, you have lost touch with your Nippon side? And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me, man? Just say Japan. And also, like, he's like, how come you don't speak your native language? And Miss Mori, when she's talking to the protagonist in private, yeah. she says, I was born here. My native language is English. I don't understand why he's telling me that I'm not Asian enough.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's just stuff that we go through now.
And I love that he's exploring these topics that we're all so familiar with,
yeah.
but he's a spy. And that adds a whole nother
yeah.
Layer to everything, you know? Which was, I just think the brilliant thing about this book, it's like talking about the issues that we all are so familiar with in like this completely new light
yeah.
and it makes it exciting and really fun.
And also in the examination of like what, especially I guess, since he's so educated and so since he is, you know, fluent and fully aware, kind of his, analysis of the Western, not just like what Western people think about us, but what the academic, like the whole, what was that book? The book that he carried around everywhere about like the Oriental communism, like,
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
And just how like he understands the way they see us. Like it's so ensconced in like this colonial imperialist like view of Asia as a place to tame, to like they need us to guide them
mm-hmm.
or else they'll fall to.
Mm-hmm.
barbarism or communism or
right.
things like that. And
there was a line he had in there where the term that the French gave to the war, it was something like the war to civilize or something.
Yeah.
The civilizing war or something. Like, you know, they, oh my gosh, they need us to come in and civilize them kind of a mentality, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just his perspective of, and I think that's why I'm such a huge fan is like, I feel like he, like, one of the memorable kind of lines in there is he talks about like dating culture or like the what I love is he goes, you know, the way he describes it is like, you know, in the East it's all about courting or courtship
yeah.
and in the West it's about dating. And it's just it just felt like it was a light bulb like
yeah.
went off in my head, me kind of now being able to identify why it, you know, romance was such a rough thing for me growing up.
And
you know,
how, like, our parents don't seem to understand the dating game. It's mm-hmm. more like, instead of like, it's all like about, have you met a girl yet or get married?
Yeah.
Instead of like, who are you seeing?
Right,
you know?
Right,
like,
right.
You know, that's true. That is a big.
It's courtship yeah. versus dating. And courtship yeah. kind of has this very, it's like commitment kind of
thing
about it. It's like you already commit and you're just courting, and so you convince the woman that
or the dad, or the parents.
And dating is just trying it out until you find what fits.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about I guess the assassinations that the protagonist had to be involved in?
So one of the big like kind of running themes in the book is how the protagonist's dual nature, because of his duality, he keeps getting put in situations that are, from his point of view, out of his control, right? He accidentally points the finger at the captain, the Chinese captain, because he's trying to draw suspicion from himself. He accidentally spurs Sonny, the reporter, to print out his like report on the military drills. Mm. Because he wants to prove to Miss Mori that he's a better communist than the reporter. And because of that, the general orders him to murder these fools, right?
I mean, like, when I read those scenes, I'm just like, you're like, why are you killing these people? There is absolutely no point. And I guess that is a theme in this book, where like this war is kind of like a no-win situation for anybody. Right. And it's just like, I was like, wow, what a waste of human life in the end.
Well, there's also a payoff for that at the end. We can get that twist. But yeah, like, and then so they want to kill the captain because they think the captain is the mole. Right. And because they point the fingers at the captain because he's getting fat. And he's like, the captain is one of those characters who seems to be,
thriving,
accepting. Like, I guess like his wife just loves making tons of food.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But to the general, oh, he's getting fat. He must be like getting paid off or something, right? This is paranoia of like wartime still.
This is random, but did you guys find it hilarious that the captain's twin sons were named like spinach and broccoli?
I was trying to think of what that would be in Chinese.
Yeah.
I was just like, wait, did he actually name his kids spinach and broccoli, or is it a translation
of
like
the Vietnamese names?
So I was like, oh, I'm curious, but.
It's got to be a translation, right?
Oh God, I can't think
or
of.
Or he like just has a great sense of humor. But sorry, the whole spy thing, you know, I guess I didn't think about it in terms of a waste of. I mean, it was obviously like pretty sad that he had to assassinate those guys. But it was such an exciting way of showing what we all go through on a more kind of exciting. Our experiences as immigrants, or, you know, children of immigrants, second generations, we do that struggle a lot of like, you know, going back and forth, but, Viet is able to kind of capture what that feels like in this spy thriller-esque, plot line. But it felt to me relatable, because I feel like I do a version of that. I'm not killing anyone, but I'm going back and forth between cultures.
Like
the cultural expectations on both sides, right?
Yeah.
And that's how I related to his struggle with like, oh God, I gotta, I gotta do this thing, but I gotta act one way and then, do something else.
But then, the second assassination with the journalist, Sonny. So he's his college classmate from back when he went to college. Sonny stayed in the States and like started a newspaper, Vietnamese language newspaper for the refugees when they came. That one seemed more like he didn't want to, like he was dragging it out, right? He was like giving Sonny every opportunity to clue him in to what was really going on. And then he ended up shooting him when Sonny accused him of like trying to, because this was after Sonny had essentially stolen Miss Mori from him.
Mm.
Even though like his relationship with Miss Mori was more of a casual open relationship and they had more of a serious thing going. But then he went there with the intention of like doing this to maintain his cover. But then it felt like, at the end, it was more personal. Like, he shot him out of personal reason, because he was just mad at him.
Well, it was also, like, Sonny being like, oh, like, I'm a better communist than you.
Yeah.
And he's just like, what are you talking about? I'm a double agent. You stayed in America when there was a war going on. Mm. I actually walked the walk. Like, you just did the talk. So I think there was a little bit of, like, a pride thing going on.
I think he was just... And you can feel he was getting frustrated that he was never getting acknowledged for his, like, work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
for being a communist. Because he was a double agent, everyone thought he was one thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, even the communists thought he was like a shitty imperialist, right?
Yeah. Poor guy couldn't win.
Yeah.
I guess we can move on to the second, not the second, but like the third arc, I guess, where he is a consultant for a Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was so weird. I did not expect that to happen in this book.
Wait, how did that start again? He was recommended. It was the senator, right?
Yeah, it was the senator. Yeah,
the senator recommended him. Or mm-hmm. was it senator representative?
I don't know. Some government official. Yeah, some congressman.
Someone was making a film on the Vietnam War and they wanted someone to read through it for authenticity. And then he read through it and made all these like
notes.
Yeah. He took it seriously. Oh, you actually want me to.
Yeah.
Like, he took it seriously when the director actually just wanted like a rubber stamp.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. That was an unexpected. I have to admit that that was the part where I emotionally detached the most, I think. Mm. Maybe because we're all out here in LA and we're all kind of in it a little bit.
I was actually surprised that like.
I was surprised too.
Yeah. They spent, because so like, so Chris, myself, and we all work within like the Asian American entertainment scene. And so these are all like very, very familiar points for us. So the fact that like he dedicated like literally like
a quarter
middle,
of the book.
Yeah, like the middle, like so many chapters on like misrepresentation and like Hollywood. I thought it was really, really funny.
Same here. Yeah. What an interesting direction unexpected.
I thought it was a good contrast to like how Americans perceive the Vietnam War and also the Vietnamese versus how the Vietnamese view themselves. And they're two totally different images. They're kind of unrecognizable.
Well, it goes back to why this book is so important or why it's so, so significant, because before like, maybe not before this book, but before this like kind of recent wave of books, like the perception of the Vietnam War was the war movies, was Apocalypse Now, was Platoon, Thin Red Line, Deer Hunter, like from the perspective of American soldiers, even like Rambo, like
totally,
it's about PTSD. Like,
And then like the fact that like the Vietnamese. Like, and you think about it, like, all the Vietnamese actors, like, extras in all these movies were probably all refugees. Like, they weren't actual communists. They were the people who, like, fought against communists, right?
Mm-hmm. The quote, they cannot represent themselves. They must be represented. It's repeated constantly throughout the book. And I just thought that it was really funny that the leads in this Hollywood Vietnam War movie were other Asians. It's like, oh.
Well, they weren't even leads. They were like secondary characters.
Yeah, they were secondary characters. Yeah. It's like, oh, like the Vietnamese can't even represent themselves. They have to be represented by other Asians. And
it was like a Korean dude playing the collaborator, a half Chinese, half white girl playing like the love interest, and then a Filipino boy playing the lovable like army mascot boy or something.
It's business as usual in Hollywood.
There's a scene in this fictionalized Hollywood movie that is clearly Apocalypse Now, where like the female lead, like a romantic interest, I guess, like she gets gang raped by like communist soldiers. And it just reminded me of how like in a lot of Vietnam War movies, like the Vietnamese woman is kind of like the symbol of the country itself. It's like, oh yeah, like you are like it's a woman who always has to like who's always like raped or falls in love with an American soldier, and that there's like a tragedy to that because it's like, oh, like he's gonna leave, and I don't know. Like they always symbolize Vietnam in cinema through a woman who is like going through a lot of suffering, and I don't know. Like it was really interesting that it was like
Or like she
there
dies,
was
a,
there
right?
was there was like a payoff to that mention later on.
Yeah. It's also because we're looking at the story through the eyes of someone who went through the war, he was able to point out all, because like the main character, the protagonist, he was there to make sure there was authenticity. That was his main thing, was like to make this as authentic as possible. Mm-hmm. And he was able to win small victories, like getting speaking parts for the Asian characters and things like that. But he was like also pointing out all like the discrepancies, right? How like the method actor playing the main captain character was like never took a shower and grew out his hair and was super stinky. When he was saying like, yeah, like American soldiers would take any chance to take a shower, even if it was like dirty water. Like that's not true. And the fact that like, I think later on in the book, he did mention a story, an anecdote where like, it was actually an American squad that pillaged a village and raped the women, you know, like the fact that like there are other sides, like no one is innocent in this, in this conflict.
Yeah. I thought like, I guess I'm jumping ahead, but, later on in the book, we find out that the female, communist agent that was working with the protagonist when she gets captured by the South Vietnamese army, she's being interrogated at a movie theater.
Yeah.
And she gets gang raped, by South Vietnamese, soldiers. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. 'Cause we just saw a scene where, like in the movie scene where, they're getting raped by, South Vietnamese soldiers. So it's like it's kind of like a foreshadowing. Yeah. But I thought it was also interesting because like that interrogation scene happened in a movie theater and it was like very ironic, but like, in war movies, it's always like the foreign soldiers. It's always like the American soldiers doing.
That's true.
Like the pillaging and the rape, or at least from like the.
Well,
depending on.
Yeah, depending. I guess it also comes down to the ideological thing, right? Like it was okay for them because she was a communist agent, whereas when she wasn't a communist agent, it was like a horrible crime.
Right. I just thought like this book did a really nice job blaming everyone.
Yes.
It's like, oh, it's not just the American soldiers that like pillaged and raped. It's not just the French who like colonized. Like it's like Vietnamese people being shitty to other Vietnamese people.
Right, right.
And I think that comes out in the main character too, because he kind of like he is there observing, assigning blame to everybody, right? Not taking responsibility for his own actions, which is part of like the ending climax, right? We can get to that when we get there.
Yeah.
But that's a big thing, kind of just like no one is innocent in all this. Like everyone has their like things you do and things you don't do all matter.
Yeah.
In these things.
There was a quote in the Hollywood arc that I really liked. Oh, actually no, scratch that. It's actually from an essay that the author wrote. He said, "Our function is to be grateful for being defended and rescued when it comes to American perception of Vietnamese American refugees."
Yeah.
And like you see that in American cinema, you see that in American stage plays. I mean, look at Miss Saigon. And it's like they pigeonhole like Vietnamese American. As
people couldn't take care of themselves.
Yeah.
Like they needed us to, if not win this war, to save them. Mm-hmm. Whereas like the reason we were in this war in the first place is
because of them.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's which is funny because there's a little bit speaking about the whole like function is to be grateful for being saved. It's like what a lot of people don't even know is that Ho Chi Minh had asked for help in like in the, you know, in during at the towards the end of World War II or while they're being colonized by the French, just asking like, you know, can you guys do something about this? And then were ignored until it became, you know, convenient to help, you know, to make it all about like, you know, fighting for good and saving the Vietnamese people from communism.
Yeah.
I guess jumping to the final arc of the book.
Right. So, well, there's the third arc, which is preparing for. So the general that the main character is the aide-de-camp to is planning a secret invasion of Vietnam, which like seemed like it was always going to be a failure or a suicide mission. Like there is like, but it was a way, like I thought it was interesting. Like, you know, like the general only felt good about himself. Like he was able to build all these like new businesses from all intents and purposes, he was like a successful immigrant. He had a liquor store. He had a chain of restaurants. He was doing really well, but he only felt good when he was commanding troops again. Like, 'cause for him, all of this was a means to take back the country, like mm-hmm. to fight this war again that like made him feel good about himself, right? So he plans that the secret invasion and sends like his four best men, right?
To go basically like
on a suicide mission. Like there's no, like he knew there was no way they were going to come back alive.
But their function was to go and like lead the resistance force, right?
Yeah.
There was like a, you know.
There's supposed to be like a whole battalion of resistance forces in a refugee camp in Thailand.
Yeah.
Like run by a former admiral.
Yeah. Basically the rebels in Star Wars.
Yeah.
The rebels in Star Wars.
And so we didn't talk about the relationship between the main character and his two best friends. Like, that is like kind of the central relationship in this entire story, right? Like, so like beyond all like the ideological difference between North and South Vietnam, East and West, like all these different like ways to classify or to affiliate oneself. For the main character, the most important bond to him was between him and his two sworn brothers, mm-hmm. right? Bon and Man. So Bon is a special forces.
Best of the best
of the South Vietnamese army.
Yeah.
And the man is basically his superior in the Communist Party. And even that, like, it's a super complicated, relationship. But the reason why the main character decides to go back to Vietnam is because Bon, his friend, volunteers. Because for Bon, for him, there's no reason to be in America. Like, there's nothing to live for.
Yeah, his identity is always going to be being a soldier.
Well, not even that. Like, if he had any hope, it would have been like, because his, like, so in the first act, like, his family gets killed while they escape. Like, a shell rips through his wife and child right before they board the plane. Right. So for him, any possibility of starting a new life or starting over in America dies with his family. Right. So for him, like, the only thing he has left is to, and I think deep down he knows, like, he has like this, a death wish.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to go and just die. And his best friend, the main character, doesn't want him to die. So he goes with them to protect him somehow. Doesn't know how. And then, in order to do that, he had to go and kill Sonny. So it's like this whole.
Just very tragic.
Super tragic.
Yeah. And like when they go back to Vietnam, they get captured.
Yeah.
And you find out that the commissaire was
Man.
Yeah. Yeah, so he gets captured, and the person who runs the prison camp they get sent to is their third best friend, Man, who pretty much demanded to be put in that position to protect his two best friends. Right.
Twisted.
Yeah. So that leads to the last act. The fourth act starts at the end of the confession. So the first 307 pages is basically the confession that the protagonist writes while in isolation during a year. I guess he was incarcerated for a year at a re-education camp.
Mm-hmm.
And so the last half, the last arc, that's the last, like, what, 80 or so pages,
mm-hmm.
is basically his re-education, right?
Completion.
I don't know about you guys, but like we know from the very beginning, from the very first page, that this is a confession that he's writing. Mm-hmm. I had a little bit of anxiety while I was reading this book, because I'm like, I don't believe in anything that the main character is telling me, because it is a confession. And I'm like, oh, all confessions are filled with lies at some point. So I thought there would be like a lot of lies that he wrote in the confession, or like he like omitted some things, and it turns out that he did omit something.
Well, I think the way I read it was that this was his chance to kind of clear his conscience. And so he left a lot of stuff in that he probably shouldn't have, which is why the commandant, who is the military leader of the prison camp, was so mad at him, because he wasn't writing he wasn't just saying what he wanted to hear, which is, I'm sorry, I'm an imperialist pig, or I did all these things wrong. He was like writing everything. But
both sides. He was, he was.
I mean, the whole time I was just like, dang, this is a really long confession. and he seems a little bit too self-righteous. And like, it's interesting because this book is called The Sympathizer, and the character is able to be empathetic to all sides, but all sides are kind of, you know, they're disappointed, like disappointing to him. I guess they all let him down. And it's also interesting because he's a communist spy and he murders people. And that's not really something that you should be able to empathize with, but because you're in the head of the character for like 370 pages.
Well, he only murders one person. He lets a lot
he lets a lot of other people die. He's a murderer. Yeah. But it's just like, you get his backstory about like his poor mother who like struggled so hard to like make sure he got an education and stuff. I'm like, okay, I guess I can be like, I can sympathize, but at the same time, you're a terrible human being.
Well, okay. So during his re-education phase, which is the last like arc of the book, basically the commandant, who is the military leader of the camp, and the commissar, who is the political leader of the camp, who's also their best friend, their third best friend, Man, who I guess got disfigured by napalm during the fall of Saigon, so no one recognized him. They want him to realize different things, right? So the commandant like wants him to rewrite this confession because he's missing one key detail, which is what happened to the female spy that they captured, right? And he ends up remembering that through this, the torture methods that he learned through the CIA that he then taught to Man through a book, right? And those were some harrowing scenes where they're kind of like, you know, they spend a good portion of the book talking about how he employed these methods on other people. And now you're seeing the tables are turned and he's being like forced awake by electric shock, not being allowed to sleep. But then so he ends up like basically through the commandant's, he's able to confess the crimes that like the commandant wants him to confess to, which is basically that while that female agent was being raped, he did nothing, right? And that's kind of a theme that is throughout his confession, was he did nothing while things were happening when he had the chance to do stuff. Like, he didn't stop. He didn't try to stop the captain's murder. He didn't try to stop Sonny's murder. He kind of just let things happen. And because of that, people died. I thought that was interesting. And part of that's also like through his actions, he unknowingly let people die. Like he, I don't know if he knew or didn't know, but his father was assassinated because of something he said.
Yeah.
Right.
Like he told his best friend Man that I wish he was dead.
Right.
And Man being his best friend said, well, now he's dead.
There's just so much of that turning of the tables.
Yeah.
And the whole doing nothing, you know, sounds very familiar, especially today. And the refugee crisis that's going on today.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a lot, you hear a lot of like, where there's not enough being done, you know, we're not doing anything, you know, and it makes you uncomfortable because it shines a light on something that maybe we can all relate to in a way, you know what I mean? With what's going on in the world right now.
So the commandant wants him to confess his crimes of doing nothing. But then Man wants him to realize something different.
An inside joke, if you could say.
Which turns out to be that in the end, nothing... What is it, nothing matters, or is it...
No, it was... Yeah. I wrote it down. He keeps asking him during the interrogation, what is more precious than independence and freedom?
Yeah, because the Ho Chi Minh's mantra was nothing is more important.
Right? But with that... I guess motto.
Yeah.
The emphasis is on independence and freedom. Yeah. But then with Man's like,
so what turns out,
Man's explanation of it is like nothing is more important than freedom and independence. And it's and in that moment, our protagonist, like, his mind just like goes into shambles. Like he goes from like talking in first person to third person, and then all of a sudden he uses the pronoun we instead of like I, and it's interesting because he realizes that every single thing that he has done for the war has just amounted to nothing. Like nothing mattered.
Yeah, because he was like he would always be able to justify that what my actions are like liberating the people we're bringing revolution. We're like, we're freeing the peasants from the clutches of capitalism and imperialists. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out, yeah, the Communist Party was just as bad as them. They could be also be bought off. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Money is still just as important now as before. It's just mm-hmm. different people are in charge.
I think it also brought up the point of just like how much an individual matters in a revolution, mm-hmm. in a failed revolution at that too. It's just like, oh, like what's more important at that point?
Yeah.
Probably a single person. And I think like with man, like he seemed to like care about every single person in his.
Yeah. Well, he was mm-hmm. a believer, right? He was the one who got the main character into the revolution. He was like, he can, what was it? The commandant said he can quote and he can spout Marx and Lenin better than anyone else. Like he was a true believer of the revolution.
Yeah.
And you can tell that he was like super disillusioned of what happened afterwards, you know? And like he was trying to like, you know, he wasn't telling the main character not to come because, oh, we need you more there. He was telling him not to come because you're going to die mm-hmm. if you come mm-hmm. here, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you guys think about the very end of the book? It's kind of open-ended. Because you don't know if the main protagonist, main character goes back to America. You don't know if he's still with the Communist Party. There's really no solid answer at the end.
But I kind of feel like at the end, he ends up with a clean slate, right? He finally comes out with a clean slate. He has no more obligations to mm-hmm. party or people like, you know, the general cut ties with him because, you know, he slept with his daughter.
Yeah.
The Communist Party thinks he's a traitor.
Yeah.
And doesn't want, like, he's no longer an agent. He's broken, right? He's like, his mind is like officially messed up and scrambled. But for the first time, he is like, he is free to do whatever he wants. And I thought that was, I guess it's kind of like starting over, right? After losing your country in a war, you start over. You're not quite yourself, mm-hmm. but you have this chance to become a new person mm-hmm. or become, mm-hmm. start again. And he didn't get that when he didn't get that when he first came to the States.
It was, yeah, yeah. For everyone else around him, it could have been a fresh start, mm-hmm. you know, time to a new chapter yeah. or whatever it was, but he was still fighting the war.
Yeah.
He was still stuck, you know, but yeah. In a way it represents
yeah.
What I guess, I mean, my parents yeah. went through.
I mean, he is broken, but he is free now.
Yeah.
You know.
I thought it was also fitting that it was an open-ended ending because there was no like nice wrap up of like the Vietnam War. So it's fitting that like this book that's about the Vietnam War and the aftermath of it, there is no like pretty bow at the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, people now even now are coming to terms with what it actually meant for the U.S. to pull out of that war, mm-hmm. right? Because the fact that like war didn't start this war. War happened to
yeah.
these people.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see, you know, what type of work comes out, artistic work comes out of. You know, we, like you were saying, Rio, it may be another 40 years until we see, you know, this type of perspective.
Yeah.
That we're only seeing, you know, news headlines of right now, of what's going on with the refugee crisis right now. There's going to be that in maybe 30, 40 years.
I guess, wrapping up, I mean, we talked a lot about themes, but I think, one theme that we didn't really touch on was original sin. Because that's mentioned a lot in the book. I think it's because the protagonist's father was a priest and he always talked about how like everybody was born as a sinner and whatnot.
Well, I think it makes sense. I mean, the story was also kind of putting blame on everyone, like you said, right? So not only the French colonizers or the American collaborators, but also the like the Catholic missionaries that came and like imposed religion on. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. I thought it was really interesting when he was being like electroshocked mm-hmm. and he, because of a lack of sleep, he's like going through his mind like how did we get here, like
right. yeah.
how did Vietnam get here, and it just keeps going back and back and back. It's just yeah. like, oh, like when communism came to China.
If I didn't do this, if I knew that, if I wasn't born, if my mom wasn't knocked up by my dad never came to Vietnam.
Yeah.
If Ho Chi Minh wasn't like inspired by Lenin, and it goes all the way back to like Adam and Eve, and it goes back to the mythical creation of Vietnam. And it, like, I just thought that was interesting because it is representative of, generational trauma, which we mentioned earlier. Mm. It's just like, each generation brings, something new to the table and brings something old as well. So, I just thought it was interesting how, he wrote this confession and he pretty much has to like go through it, and he's like going through his confession being like, where did I went wrong, where did this war and where did this aftermath go. He's trying to find a place where everything went wrong, and honestly there is no single point where everything did go wrong.
I
just thought that was interesting.
That's interesting.
Super interesting. The whole last like few chapters was just,
it was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It, like, there's no pretty way to say it. It was very uncomfortable to read. And, I don't know. I'm glad that it was uncomfortable because war is not something that should be glorified or,
And like, it's, almost poetic that he didn't like, you know, he didn't receive his hero's like homecoming, right? He came back and he was still seen as the enemy.
Yeah. Fuck, poor guy, man. Yeah. He's just,
I don't know if he's a poor guy. He killed a lot of people. I'm sorry. I have a hard Mira time sympathizing.
She has no sympathy for the sympathizer.
No sympathy for the sympathizer. Oh, man. Give him a break. You know what? That actually, now that you said that, one of the more memorable kind of lines in there was something like, he said something about like tragedy. It wasn't about right versus wrong. It was about right versus right. And that just kills because, you know, he honestly thought he was doing the right thing.
Every side thought they were doing the right thing.
Every single
person he talks, like the general thought he was doing the right thing. The communists thought they were doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Even the professor. The Oriental Studies professor to like the professor that wrote the book on like how communism would be the fall of Oriental, like the British guy thought he was doing the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like the congressperson and the like, everyone, like, yeah, like nothing matters.
Nothing matters. That's the general theme of this book. Nothing matters. Your life is a waste. I'm kidding. But
if for anything, I mean, the fact that he, you know, that's a reason to sympathize with him because he was honestly trying to do the right thing. And, you know, the book just drove me crazy because it made me imagine what would I do? You know, like, what are folks in, conflict zones right now? Like, they've got to choose, right? They have to choose a side. We don't have to, look at us. Like, we're so comfortable. We don't have to choose any sides right now. And it's hard, you know, right? And right. Maybe something's brewing and we don't even know, but it's going to come a time when maybe we have to make a choice that's as insane as what this character went through in this book. And, you know, we're going to choose what we think is right. Right. And if anything, that's why, you know, I feel for this guy, cause he's trying to freaking do the right thing. And the world's just like shitting all over him,
playing his part. And maybe that's part of the commentary too, is he was just a soldier doing his job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And his job ended up being the cause for a lot of people dying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But you know, He was just doing as he was told.
I really want a
very common refrain.
Right. That's why we need aliens to invade Earth, because then we will all be one. We'll be Earthlings and we'll be fighting for Earth. It'll be really unifying.
We'll unite against another, you know, to oppress.
I really want to commend Viet Thanh Nguyen for spending 11 years doing research for this book.
He did a lot of
research. He did so much research. The acknowledgement
was just all like...
Yeah, it was badass.
He did...
Like, the reason why I think this book won a prize was because it brought something new to literature, and it really did encompass the entirety of the Vietnam War from all sides.
Yeah.
And from like a single person's perspective too. So I really want to like applaud him for doing that much research and dedicating like so much of his time writing this book.
Well, and it shows, you know, it won the Pulitzer, which in turn probably encouraged more people to read it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the hope is that this will inspire someone else to write their stories or to find out their story. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many, when we, you know, as Asian Americans, like we know there's so many stories out there that haven't been told on the big screen or have been told from like just one side, right? Can you imagine this as a move? This is already like 3 or 4 movies.
Yeah, we were talking about this at book club earlier. We're like, oh, what if this was a Netflix series? Like, what if what if this was adapted for the screen? It would be amazing.
Yeah. Like each segment too, like the Fall of Saigon in itself would be like an Oscar worthy, like, you know, prestige film. The satire of being a consultant on Platoon or Apocalypse Now would be like an interesting story. You know, the story of like the exile general, like reinvading his country is another good story. And then the torture story at the end.
Yeah.
And it would also like show like so many different types of Asians and Asian Americans. Because there weren't just like Vietnamese and Vietnamese Americans in this book. It was like Japanese Americans and Korean Americans and Filipinos. I guess, like, concluding this episode, final thoughts?
I really liked reading it. Full confession, I read, quote-unquote, a third of this book on audiobook. We're in L.A., just long commutes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just gotta, like,
there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
So the audiobook was also read by Francois Chau, which is a semi-famous actor. Mm-hmm. He was the scientist in Jurassic World and Jurassic Park. But yeah, like I was really, really like once it started going, like I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
You know?
There's nothing wrong with doing a book on audiobook.
I'm just, you know, for the purists out there.
One day I would like to be sponsored by Audible. Call us.
That'd be so awesome.
But yeah, I'm glad that and like being a part of the Asian American entertainment community, like a reoccurring thought throughout this reading it or experience the book is like, I'm glad this exists.
Yeah.
I'm glad people are.
Yeah.
I'm glad it exists. I'm glad it's got so much press and glad people are reading this because these are all like, it is basically everything that we're fighting for in terms of representation, like stories like this, perspectives like this, and themes like these
that totally
aren't a part of our current, you know,
I agree. I loved it so much. I wish it was required reading by Asian American parents to their kids. how do we get that going? I think it's so, I just feel like it's so important. We don't have a required reading list and this opened up. I mean, me growing up with these stories, my dad always trying to tell me to think about both sides and trying to keep an open mind about things.
Yeah.
I was still just blown away by this book and I just feel like it's so important for second gens to read something like this, you know. I can't say enough about it.
Don't just take what Hollywood feeds you. That's one very specific side that doesn't humanize us.
Right. And even the stories that some of our family members give us is just one-sided. And then this book is so important to counter against that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I really like this book and I was actually very surprised at how relevant it is now.
not even
just like the Hollywood representation because, oh my God, 2016 was the year of whitewashing and it's like, oh, nothing has changed. But, it's relevant now, especially with how politics are playing out in America and how, we have refugees fleeing to our country like every day. And, it just made me think that, I don't know. It was a very educational read and it actually like motivated me to pay more attention to politics now. I mean, I try, but, sometimes the news is.
It's been rough lately.
It's been so rough lately. we had like 4 hours of like cafefe joy, and then that joy was like,
even that was a distraction, right? You know? Even that was like distracting us from like what was really happening, which is like the world ending.
But I was really glad that our book club picked up this book, because I think we definitely offer a different perspective to the book, because we are Asian Americans, and also a lot of our members are not Asian Americans, and like a couple of my non-Asian friends who picked up this book, they're learning a lot of new things that they didn't learn from school, or like maybe they grew up in I have one friend who grew up in a community where there were a lot of Vietnamese Americans, but she never really understood what they had to go through to get to this country, and what they're still going through now. So,
well, we're just like one generation down, like maybe the start of the third generation, like a lot of, you know, people, our peers just are having kids, but like, there are people who live through that still alive.
It's, which is insane, you know. The other thing too is like, you know,
go ahead.
I was saying, the book, you know, anyone, it does kind of give you a different, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's just for anyone who's ever complained about any of your problems here, I think this book will shed some light on what you have to complain about.
First world problems. Yeah. Well, I guess that'll do it for our discussion of The Sympathizer by Viet Thanh Nguyen. Yeah, hope you guys enjoyed it. If you guys have any of your own thoughts, please sound off on our Goodreads forums. We'd love to hear what you think. Rira, what are we reading for the month of June?
June is Pride Month, so we will be reading I.W. Gregorio's None of the Above. Mm-hmm. It's a YA contemporary novel on a teenage girl who finds out that she is intersex.
Oh.
So.
Cool.
Yeah, you guys have until the end of June to read that.
Yeah, and new development, if you want to pick up this book from Amazon, we do have an Amazon store now that is affiliated with Books and Boba. So if you want to purchase the book on Amazon and throw a little money our way to help support the program, please feel free to do so. The link will be in the show notes. And on that note, thanks for listening. Thanks, Chris. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. And
thanks for having me. I'm such a big fan of this book, and I love talking about it. So thanks for having me. It was fun.
People want to find out more about your stuff, where can they go?
You know, don't even worry. Just buy more of Viet Thanh Nguyen's book books. He has another
Refugee.
Yeah.
Short stories.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's working on. Do you want to see a sequel to this, or do you want to keep it open ended?
I like it open-ended, but if he writes a sequel, I'll read it.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see y'all next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This episode of Books and Boba was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and produced and edited by Marvin Yue. For further discussion on the books covered at Books and Boba, please visit our Goodreads forum. You can find the link on our Facebook page at Books and Boba, as well as by searching for the group Books and Boba on Goodreads.com. Books and Boba is also a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a brand new collective of Asian American podcasts and podcasters. You can learn more about the collective, as well as check out our founding slate of programs, by visiting the website www.podcastpotluck.com. Hey, if you like this podcast, check out the newest show from the Potluck Podcast Collective.
Hello, and welcome to the creatively named Korean drama podcast, where we are watching the hit drama Boys Over Flowers and talking about it with a few friends.
Like, they're just very rich and they're beautiful, right?
Yeah. The entire first episode, I feel like, mostly features them walking through doorways or walking into a place, right?
Right.
People are screaming and they're walking. That's the only thing that those four guys do practically the entire episode.
Who at this point, watching this drama in episode two, would ever be like, Tandy and Perm Boy need to be together at this point, right?
I'd
be like, I detest this guy.
Yeah.
you know?
I'm rooting for her and Ringo at this point.
Ringo needs some love.
Yeah. I like Pottery Guy.
All right, what did I get myself into?
You're committed.
I'm very committed, you guys.
New episodes of the Korean Drama Podcast drop every Tuesday at podcastpotluck.com.